Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic who joins us weekly. The films Stop Making Sense, Theater Camp, and The Wonderful World of Henry Sugar.
Well, again, this week I would like to talk about three films that are very different from each other. We've got a documentary, a mockumentary, and then a fiction film. So a bit of variety, as we often have. So I would like to start with an old movie, which is coming back into movie theaters. It's having a revival, and that movie is Stop Making Sense, a movie from way back in 1984, and it was directed by Jonathan Demme, an extremely major filmmaker who unfortunately has since died, but his movies include The Silence of the Lambs and, oh, a whole lot of other things. A director who really could work through any number of different genres and very often doing a very good job of it. So he directed this movie, but the movie, of course, is all about Talking Heads, the extremely major rock band headed by David Byrne. It's kind of interesting because this is not the first revival that Stop Making Sense has had. Again, it was first released back in 1984. But during another revival of it, an earlier revival quite a few years ago, I actually went down and talked with David Byrne about the movie and about, you know, what he thought of it after some years had passed. Of course, the movie is partly celebrated because it has some big Talking Heads hits like Once in a Lifetime and Burning Down the House. But it's also a very creative movie in terms of the concert film format. I don't think it was exactly a breakthrough film for rock and roll concert films, because about a half a dozen years before Stop Making Sense, there had been Martin Scorsese's film The Last Waltz about the band. And that, I still think, is, you know, one of the greatest concert films of all time. So Stop Making Sense came after that. And it had its own kind of new twist to begin. And according to what David Byrne told me some years ago, he said that the show itself, not talking about the film of the show, but the show itself that is filmed, was cinematic all the way from the start. This is what David Byrne felt. He said he has an arc. The show starts with an empty stage, and during the first half of the concert, the visual elements of the show are assembled on the stage, and then in the second half, those elements are put to use. And David Byrne also said that there's a psychological arc in his performance. He said, and I quote here, "It's the story of an uptight guy who's eventually shaken loose by all these rhythms. There's kind of a narrative. This is a lot different from a lot of concert movies, which are basically one song after another with no overall structure." And then David Byrne told me Jonathan Demme recognized those arcs even before Byrne himself was fully aware of them, and used them to shape the movie itself. So Stop Making Sense was an enormous success as a movie, and I think it gave a great boost to Talking Heads' career. Although here's just one more comment from David Byrne's talking about the success of the movie when it came out in 1984. He said, "In some ways it was wonderful. It got the band to places we'd never gotten to before, and it cemented our reputation very nicely. But in other ways," he said, "it was kind of devastating. We hardly toured anymore. How do you compete with something like this?" Meaning, how can you compete with the movie? And he said the answer is you can't, so you have to use it as a way of liberating yourself to do something completely different. And sure enough, about 4 years after the movie Stop Making Sense came out, Talking Heads disbanded. And at that point, David Byrne went out in concerts with a Latin band. And since then, he's actually returned to the stage. Maybe a couple of years ago, he did a very, very good show, which I saw originally during the pandemic when it was streamed on TV, and then later on I saw it on Broadway. So he's come back to doing live shows and to thinking of live shows as a very, very important thing. But Stop Making Sense, you know, had mixed results. On one hand, it sort of probably at least partially caused the breakup of Talking Heads a few years later. It certainly caused them to stop touring for a while because they felt they couldn't compete with the movie. But on the other hand, the movie, exactly as David told me, it cemented their reputation, and it remains, I think, a pretty popular picture to this day. I should now plug my book, Rock and Roll Movies, from Rutgers University Press, which talks about a whole range of rock and roll films, some of which are documentaries, like Stop Making Sense and like The Last Waltz and various others. And I think Stop Making Sense is one of the better ones. I actually liked it better when I saw it a second time than when I saw it the first time. And I think it's one of those movies that sort of keeps improving with age. So anybody who is into rock and roll, anybody who is into 1980s rock and roll or 1980s pop culture should absolutely see the new revival of Stop Making Sense, or, you know, see the old version if you can get a hold of that. It's still a good movie, I think, and it's a lot of fun. And it's a tribute to Jonathan Demme, who is no longer with us, and also to David Byrne, who is still very much with us. So that's our documentary for today. As promised, we will now move to a mockumentary. And it's been out for a little while now, and it seems to be doing very nicely with audiences, and it is called Theater Camp. And it is a mockumentary about exactly that. It was directed and co-written by the team of Molly Gordon and Nick Lieberman. And it is about a summer camp where kids go to practice and learn and refine their theater skills. It's about a whole bunch of kids who just love the idea of somehow growing up to be being great stars and all of that. So the very beginning of Theater Camp presents us with a plot twist. Namely, the owner of the theater camp suddenly has an enormous health crisis and is pretty much out of the whole rest of the movie. So why would you do that at the very, very beginning? Well, this middle-aged lady who has this horrible health crisis and is laid up in the hospital and can't do anything, her son now takes over as the head of the camp. His name is Troy. And to give you an idea of what this young man is like, he calls himself, because his name is Troy, an entrepreneur. Okay, not very clever. So that's him. And he thinks of himself as this great business person who is somehow going to become a great executive. And his start is running the theater camp. And one of the crises that unfolds over the course of the film is that he starts having talks with a woman who approaches him, who it runs the financial affairs of a rival theater camp. And it begins to look like she is playing him for some kind of sucker. And that plays out over the course of the movie. And at the end of the movie, it is finally resolved. But most of the movie does not deal with that. Most of the movie doesn't even deal with Troy, although he's one of the major characters. Most of the movie deals with the various instructors and the kids, perhaps above all the kids, because they end up being some of the most colorful characters. Now, among the instructors, the ones who we see the most of are the ones played by the two people who also directed the movie. One is named Amos, and the other one is named Rebecca Diane. And they met at the theater camp when they were kids themselves. And all these years later, they still go there and they still work there, and now they're teachers there. They never got together as a couple because it turned out that Amos was gay, but they are still the closest of friends. They are so just intimately intertwined with each other in every way. And of course, that causes various tensions as the movie unfolds. One of the reasons it appears that they still are, they met at theater camp when they were kids, and why they're still, life still revolves around this wonderful summertime activity, which, by the way, is in the Adirondacks in New York. One of the reasons is because there they are important. They never got anywhere in the world of professional theater, but they're, yes, they are important. So they still keep going there, and they are now teachers there, and they are two of the main characters. And it's really fun to see their relationship and little tensions that develop between the two of them. One of the crises that emerges is that Rebecca Diane has, they're making a show together, and they do that every year. And Rebecca Diane doesn't seem to be able to quite getting around to doing the last act, the last song, the last bit of business, and that causes some of the tension between them, and it resolves itself eventually in kind of an amusing way. And there are various other people. I'll just mention one of them. There's a young woman who has totally lied on her resume. She claimed to have authority in all of these different areas of theater, and in fact, she knows almost nothing about anything to do with theater. So she's kind of an amusing minor character. And there's a few others around. There's a person who does the costumes and a person who does the dance instruction and so forth and so on. And they're all sort of amusing characters, each with an individual specialty. And then there are the kids. And I'm not going to go on about the kids, but there's all different kinds of kids. There's big kids and little kids and mature kids and childish kids and all the different kinds. The one thing is that pretty much all of them somehow dream that someday they may become stars, and this theater camp is just the first step on their wonderful journey. And so that's kind of amusing too. Now, as a mockumentary, a term I don't really like, by the way, but it comes in handy, as a mockumentary, I don't think it's all that good. First of all, it doesn't even remind us all that often that it is a mockumentary. At the beginning, it's pretty aggressive about that. But after a while, it sort of forgets about it. Kind of like the TV series The Office. Most of the time, you just sort of get little hints every once in a while that we're watching a mockumentary or a documentary, supposedly, the whole time. That's sort of the way this movie is. And that's okay with me. The thing is that the great classic mockumentaries of all time, aside from This Is Spinal Tap, directed by Rob Reiner, are the wonderful ones by Christopher Guest from years ago. Waiting for Guffman, Best in Show, A Mighty Wind. These are the great classics of the genre, and I can't say that Theater Camp comes anywhere near those. But it's a very nice, amiable film. I found it a bit slick. I didn't find it nearly as funny as it was trying to be. But if you want to see some light, oh, very, very late summer entertainment, you could do a lot worse than Theater Camp. And if you're interested in kids or in the theater, then it's a movie you should definitely go out and see. And our final movie today is a movie, kind of movie I don't usually deal with here on our show because it's a short film. It's a grand total of, well, it's a little under 40 minutes long, but it's by a major filmmaker, Wes Anderson, and it's based on a very interesting story by the great writer Roald Dahl. So I really wanted to take note of it. Also, by the way, it is streaming on Netflix, so it's very easy for a lot of people to get a hold of. And it is called The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar. And the movie leaves out part of the Roald Dahl story. That's why it comes in, you know, a little under 40 minutes long. The story is actually sort of long for a short story. But what it does present at the story is just so literal, it is almost word for word, to the point where characters will say something and then turn to the camera and say, "I said," and then go back to the conversation. So it is that literal, extremely, extremely, extremely close to the story. And it's a very interesting story, and the movie recounts a great deal of that story, and it's a lot of fun. So here is what the story is about. It is about a writer who is evidently meant to be Roald Dahl, and he is sitting in his writing hut, and he is writing a story, and he is talking to himself and talking to the camera as he does so. The story that he is writing is about a man named Henry Sugar. Not surprising. Henry Sugar is not his real name, but that's the name that he goes by under the movie. His real name has to be concealed. And he is played by the wonderful Benedict Cumberbatch. I should mention that Roald Dahl is played by Ralph Fiennes. So this movie has an excellent cast. So Henry Sugar is a very, very, very wealthy person who thinks about nothing in his life but acquiring more and more and more money all the time. To this end, he goes out and gambles. He gambles quite successfully. He has made an enormous amount of money gambling, partly because he cheats. So he's a gambler who cheats, and that's what made him rich. But then he finds out about something. He accidentally stumbles upon the story, and this is a story within the story now, of a man from India, played in the movie by Ben Kingsley, and a physician from India, played by Dev Patel. And the physician discovers a man who claims that through the training of a wonderful spiritual yogi, he can see without using his eyes. So we now have the whole story of this man who has learned how to see without using his eyes, and we have the Henry Sugar character stumbling upon this story pretty much by accident and saying, "Well now, if I could see without using my eyes, think how wonderfully I could cheat at gambling." So he undertakes spiritual yoga yogic disciplines. And yes, he eventually develops this skill, and the story unfolds from there. I won't tell how it all comes out. So we have here a story which is obviously very whimsical. I read it some years ago, and I found it one of Roald Dahl's more fascinating stories. It's certainly lighter than a lot of Roald Dahl stories, which tend to often to be very dark. And it's really very effectively transferred to film with, again, this terrific cast: Ralph Fiennes, Benedict Cumberbatch, Dev Patel, Ben Kingsley, and others. So it's got a wonderful cast. The movie was directed by Wes Anderson, and maybe that's the most important thing to know about it, because Wes Anderson has a style. And the style is not to everybody's taste. He's a very popular filmmaker. His style is not exactly to my taste. It's very precious. It's very calculated. I always come away from his movies, including his most recent one, Asteroid City, his most recent feature, feeling that there's not a shred of spontaneity anywhere in sight. Everything is calculated, measured down to the decimal point. So, okay, I often feel that his movies are fairly lifeless, and I sort of feel that way about The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar. However, the whimsical qualities of the story, the excellent acting by the cast, and some of the little jokey touches, because it's a movie where with a whole lot of acknowledgement of the camera and all that kind of thing, and people will sometimes change costume in a matter of 10 seconds and all of that kind of stuff makes it very diverting to watch. And this is a plus or minus, depending on your taste, it is a little under 40 minutes long. So even I admire Wes Anderson's films in some ways, I don't like them in some other ways, but I find this one of his more appealing films. By the way, many years ago, he made an animated film called Fantastic Mr. Fox, also based on Roald Dahl, which I also regard as one of his better films. So, if you like Wes Anderson, if you like Roald Dahl, or if you just like whimsical, not too terribly long storytelling, The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar is a mildly wonderful story. And that is, I hope, my mildly wonderful story this week.
For which we thank you, as always and ever, David Sterrett. Films in Focus, the films Stop Making Sense, Theater Camp, and The Wonderful World of Henry Sugar.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.